Hey everybody, welcome to the Open Mic with Michael Thiessen show. We are just kicking off our series on liberty and freedom and discussions with individuals who have ethical and important voices. And today I have the privilege of interviewing one of our Canadian truckers, a guy named Rick Wall. Rick, thanks so much for being on the show with me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's a privilege to have this opportunity. And I'd just like to start by saying that being in interviews and it's definitely not a strong point of mine. But over the past couple of months here during the protest period, I've been on a number of different interviews, and it's made me go far and above my comfort level. So I'll do the best I can in this one here, and I really do appreciate being on with you.
Rick, you would think this would be old school for you. I think you've been on Fox News. What was that experience like?
Yeah, crazy enough. Yes, we were invited to be on the Laura Ingraham show a couple of times during the protest. Extremely nerve-wracking. When I got the email from them, I thought for sure it was a scam email. I'm like, why would Fox News want to talk to us in southern Manitoba? And we did the first slow roll in Emerson, Manitoba on January 17th. And it caught fire pretty rapidly. It was extremely incredible how fast that spread. And Fox News reached out to us, and we ended up doing two weeks in a row we were on the Laura Ingraham show. So again, it was very humbling, and it was extremely nerve-wracking for me. But I allowed God to lead me, and I allowed him to use me in the best way possible. And I just, you know, I followed his lead. So if I would have gone according to my comfort zone, I would have ran for the hills. But it was, I felt too, you know, to have that opportunity, we're just trying to spread the good message and trying to spread the message of hope to people. And I figured if that's how God wants to use me, I'm just going to allow him to use me. And however it comes across, then let's just hope it's in a positive way. And so, yeah, it's been a very interesting experience, to say the least.
So, Rick, why don't you tell our viewers a little bit about yourself and go back just a little bit, or just go back as much as you feel you need to before those slow roll protests, and then we'll kind of get into the convoy. So you're living in Lower Manitoba, mm-hmm. and do you run a trucking business? Like, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I live near Winkler, Manitoba, which is southern Manitoba. We are literally about 10 minutes from the border, not where our trucks typically cross, but it's about 45 minutes or so from where trucks typically cross. And yes, I'm a business owner. I run a trucking company out of Winkler. We do cross-border trucking, US and Canada, all over the country, or all over North America. And they've been in the trucking industry for now about 12 years or so, just celebrating our 10th year anniversary, actually, for our Open Deck division that we started back in 2012 with just myself as the first truck/driver to start the business off. And we currently run about 30 trucks, and we have I used to run my company off of my personal property for a number of years. Last 2 years we moved on to a larger property with a brand new office and shop and so forth. So Lord's blessed us tremendously. And as far as the freedom fight goes, me myself personally, I've been part of protesting for the freedom fight for well over a year. A good friend of mine did the first, we did a first driving rally in the Winkler, Manitoba area back in, it was early 2021. When they first started enforcing mask mandates and so forth, we fought against it right away. And so that's kind of where my freedom fighting started, so to say. And we've been going pretty steady ever since, helped organize many different rallies. Again, ended up speaking at a couple of rallies unexpectedly, but again, was not my comfort zone, but I did what I felt was the right thing to do, and just been very, very involved in the freedom movement in this area. And then came beginning of January, of course, the information was very vague in regards to the mandate for the truck drivers. We weren't sure yet at that point if they were actually going to follow through with the mandate, and of course, it was going to affect our company tremendously. Due to whatever reasons, we don't, for medical privacy, first of all, we don't ask any of our office staff or or any of our drivers, whether they have been vaccinated or not. And that will always be the case. So for us, we didn't really know how many drivers were or weren't vaccinated, how many drivers it was going to affect. But I got the sense pretty quick. It was the majority of our guys had chosen not to get vaccinated for whatever reason that was. And of course, it was going to really affect our company. And so it came January 15th. Sure enough, they did enforce the mandate. And so I told myself for a long time, and I told their team, try to keep them encouraged. But I told them if they are going to enforce this mandate, then, you know, we're not going to sit back and do nothing. We want to do things ethically. It was extremely important to me that we did things, you know, following the law. If we're going to go out protesting, and we wanted to do it in a loving, peaceful way to spread, just to spread the message of hope, and but to tell our government this is not okay with what you're doing. So on January 15th, the mandate started. They started enforcing it, which was on a Saturday. And so we literally organized an event to do the slow roll at Emerson, Manitoba, at the US-Canada border. On January 17th, I felt very important to go and show them right away, you know, that, you know, it's not right with what's going on here. And in protest, we're going to show our right to, you know, to be able to go earn a living for our families in the best way we know how for the truckers. But of course, it was never just about the truckers. It was about freedoms for everybody in this entire country. So we were out there at 3 a.m. on January 17th. Yeah, January 17th, we were out there at 3 a.m. ready to protest. And that's what we did. And so that was the first convoy slow roll protest in Canada. But the Canada-wide Freedom Convoy to Ottawa was already in full stage planning. I had no part of organizing that one whatsoever. This was just something that I felt personally was very important, that we just go do a protest at the border, right where they were enforcing this mandate right off the bat. So that's a little bit of a history on my freedom movement and just a little bit of information that's transpired over the past, I guess, just over a year now. So
that's really good. Man, I have so many questions for you, Rick. And this is why I love interviewing people. Rick, I just want you to know that I think our world is really tired of polished individuals reading from a script mm-hmm. who, if you ask them direct questions, won't give you a direct answer in any way. Right. And so I know you might not feel like you are the skilled presenter that you would want to be. But in the same way that I remind people when they're about to give testimonies at our church for how Christ saved them and we're doing a baptism, I always remind people, they hear me as a preacher all the time. It's important that other people hear your voice and hear your testimony. And Rick, so I just want to encourage you, your testimony is vitally important to sharing the whole scope of what's been going on. So, okay, I've got so many questions. Sure. A few of them are going to be like really simple, and then we'll get into just more description questions. So first is, you know, the Freedom Convoy has gone away. The emergency measures trounced that and then evaporated. Are the mandates lifted at the border for your company, or are you guys still dealing with these vaccine mandates at the border every day?
No, the federal mandates have not lifted. I shouldn't say none of them. There is an update for April 1st. We were told that there was going to be changes coming, and we just learned the only thing that's really changed is for fully vaccinated people coming into our country no longer need a negative test if they're fully vaccinated, which, I mean, for the non-vaccinated drivers, it doesn't make any difference, right? So
it's still punishment.
Absolutely. Nothing's changed for the truck drivers. So that said, it's kind of ironic how the whole thing has worked out, because it started with the truck drivers, but we said the entire time we're fighting for everybody's freedoms. And we're going to continue protesting until we get all of our freedoms back, federal and provincially. While lo and behold, most provincial mandates have lifted, but one of the key things that the truckers need for this industry is still in place. So I think it's kind of interesting. And of course, there's no logic behind it. In my opinion, there was never logic behind it in the first place. But now with most provincial mandates lifted, for the federal government to still think, you know, that there's any reason or any risk for any of these drivers, crossing the border that are not vaccinated. I mean, it's just, it's, I mean, you can hardly put it into words. It's just, it's nonsense. It really is. So yeah, for the truckers, nothing's changed. And we haven't seen any updates that there will be any changes coming in the foreseeable future.
And the reality of it is the reason why I use the word punishment, Rick, is because it's the same thing for the unvaccinated just to travel across this country. The unvaccinated right. can still not get on a plane.
Right.
They still not can get on a train. They're still treated like a second-class citizen. And like you said, there's never been any logic to this, and there's never been actually any science to this. The reality of it is right. is now there's a punishment on the unvaccinated because they didn't do what our prime minister wanted everybody to do, which was, mm-hmm. you know, continue to make drug companies a lot of money.
Right.
Okay. My second question then is, explain to our listeners a slow roll and explain to our listeners how that is legal, and explain to them how that came and went, because I think everybody at the beginning of the Freedom Convoy was very confused between what was going on at every border, and mm-hmm. you know, some borders seemed to be the protests seemed to be going very, very well, and there wasn't really significant problems. And then, of course, we had the Ambassador Bridge here in
yeah.
in Windsor, Ontario, and the police, you know, ended that quite severely and mm-hmm. quickly. Can you explain to me just exactly what this slow roll protest was? And then did it happen at the border, or did it happen at the Manitoba legislative buildings as well?
Sure, I can gladly answer that. So a big difference between a slow roll, I'll try to approach it in a simple form. It's the best way I know how. So a slow roll is basically following all the traffic acts. And I did some research before we did the first slow roll. I reached out to the local RCMP and kind of give them heads up what we were going to be doing. So basically in Manitoba, we don't have a minimum speed limit. And some jurisdictions, that's different. So as long as you're moving, in a sense, you're not breaking any traffic violations. So that was basically the reason why we did what we did at the border on January 17th. We drove about 4 kilometers an hour, taking up both lanes. It's a four-lane highway. It's right when you cross the border at the U.S.-Canadian border. And the way it's situated in Emerson, there's a turnaround spot basically right by Canada Customs Office, which was very convenient for us because that's where we would turn around. So, you know, they're watching this protest all day long. So we would go a couple miles north, a couple miles south, and then we would obviously massive delays for any of the trucks passing through. But we weren't, we didn't create a blockade. That's the big difference, right? Traffic's still flowing, but it's flowing extremely slowly. So you're being impactful and making a statement, but at the same time, goods and everything is still allowed to move through. So the first one on January 17th, we did that with the support of RCMP, but with RCMP understanding. They didn't give us any trouble. We had to communicate well with them. And so, like I said, there wasn't really anything they could do because we weren't breaking any violations whatsoever. We were following the traffic act to the T. And so the difference between that and a blockade, which what you were witnessing at the Coutts border for quite some time, I mean, those guys, they held strong for a long time. You're blocking a highway. You're stopping the flow of goods. And that is breaking the traffic violations, right? So that's why things kind of got out of hand there, I think, or that's why law enforcement moved in the way they did. I'm not saying it's ethical in the way that they did it. A lot of sketchy things happened at Coutts, in my opinion. But that was one difference for us to continue doing it lawfully. And I get it. Most people supported the way we were doing it. I'd say probably 98%. But you always had those as well. They said, hey, you know what? If we're going to make a real statement, we really need to block this thing. We need to shut it down. I could totally understand. Like I'm just as frustrated, was just as frustrated as everybody else. It's like, yeah, let's make a real statement. And like you saw, like you mentioned at the Ambassador Bridge, same thing there. They shut the whole thing down. I totally understand where those people were coming from. We were trying to be as effective as possible, but still be able to continue without having a major intervention from law enforcement. So that was the reason why we chose to do what we did. And that's the two big differences. And that's ultimately the ending you saw. Law enforcement moved in on all the blockades and they disrupted it. Meanwhile, any slow roll protest is not really anything they can do about it, just because you're not actually breaking any laws. It's an extremely inconvenience for everybody. And they don't like you being there, but there isn't really anything lawfully that they can do to stop it. So those are two of the big differences. And I want to just state, for our Manitoba organization here, and of course, when I say that, you know, I organized, I always want to iterate, it's we, there's so many people. Somebody has to take a leap of faith, I guess, and get something started. But there's so many people behind the scenes that make these things happen. It's so incredible. Stories, I could talk for hours and hours about all the stories. But we ended up, so we did the first slow roll in Manitoba January 17th, and then the Freedom Convoy started. I really wanted to go to Ottawa. And I did a lot of thinking about it and praying about it. And so I heard of other border blockades or protests were going to be happening right across the country. So I felt it extremely important that we did something in Manitoba again. So then I decided to stay back. And with other organizers, we organized another slow roll. We went back to Emerson again for January 29th, which was the same day that the Freedom Convoy got to Ottawa. And so we were there for another 4 days, I believe. That way we stayed for like 4 days continuously. Well, we'd stop for a night in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, we'd be out there again, doing it again. So, but I had the privilege to roll with a Freedom Convoy from Winnipeg, Manitoba to Kenora, Ontario. That's a pretty good stretch. And it was just absolutely amazing. The whole journey, like the Emerson protest, the whole part from start to finish. And then of course we ended up we ended up going to the, after slow rolling for another 4 days at Emerson, we decided that it would be more effective to move everybody over to the legislative building in Winnipeg. So that's what we ended up doing. We went there on January 29th. No, we arrived at the legislative building on February 4th. And we stayed there for another 2.5 weeks until we were basically forced out. We got written notice from the Winnipeg Police Service that we had to go. And again, I can elaborate on that experience a little bit more later if you want me to. So many stories to tell there on what that experience was like. But yeah, that hopefully that answers your questions there and gives you a bit of an idea of what the different processes are like.
No, that was really helpful, Rick. And, for all of the media that we have in our country, I don't know if that definition of a slow roll, peaceful legal process has been explained. Maybe it has been explained somewhere, but there were, I think there continue to be so many Canadians confused about, okay, I've heard that everything was going on at these borders, but I don't understand. And then how did that really contribute to the Freedom Convoy, or did it? And I think your answer there has just been really helpful for our listeners to know how many different people were coordinating different things and engaging in legal protest. It still baffles my mind that so many Canadians were peacefully protesting and our prime minister didn't do an ounce of diplomacy. Yeah. I've been using that word a lot lately on the podcast because nobody spoke to any protesters about any type of compromise. And still, months later, when it's lunacy to even say that there's a pandemic out there, they're still punishing the unvaccinated and haven't listened to a single word. So Rick, are any slow roll protests continuing? I know that everybody right now is very concerned, certainly the way that the federal government and the Ontario government treated, the Ford government treated the truckers on the on the Ambassador Bridge. Has that basically slowed everything down a little bit? I know for myself, I know so for so many other freedom fighters, it's just been a time of like rest and trying to regather. Have protests stopped, or are we planning any more because the mandates have not come down? I know that in Ontario, many of the mandates are coming down, but we have not seen the Reopen Ontario Act legislation be dissolved yet. That's still on the books, and potentially it could be reinstated, of course, mm-hmm. the way that it has been in the past. How are you feeling out there in Manitoba, and are there any protests planned?
So protesting certainly hasn't stopped. To the extent that the whole country was basically protesting during the convoy, it's not like that. I mean, most of the truckers have gone home. There was a small convoy actually that went back west towards BC. I think there's some trucker protesting events still happening in BC and some smaller events throughout the country. But as far as that goes, I think you're on point where everybody's just kind of taking back and just kind of reassessing the whole situation and just kind of trying to find the most effective way to go forward. I guess I got to speak for myself when I look at it that way. But there is still consistent protests happening. I see massive crowds turn out all across the country. I think most capital cities throughout the country, I think, are holding protests on a weekly basis, generally marches, foot marches to parliament buildings and so forth. I know what's happening in Manitoba. There's been protests here every weekend, and there's more protests planning for basically every upcoming weekend here in Winnipeg and also in our local town. There's minor, smaller protests. It's not involving the truckers as much, obviously, as it did before. But, I mean, people aren't stopping as far as the protesting goes. And you're right, it's extremely concerning still at this point. I'll be honest, I feel very blessed in this province. I mean, most mandates have lifted. You know, you can go into stores, stuff like that, without being ridiculed, without wearing a mask. Although I personally didn't comply with that order for a long time and just dealt with the hassles that came with it. But it's nice to see, you know, like people, it just seems like people are friendlier again. It just feels more normal, you know? So we're thankful for that. But at the same time, I feel the same way as many other people, that we feel it's temporary. Although I think we should, and again, I can only speak for myself, I need to look at the positives. There's so much negativity going on, and I can get indulged in that. I get consumed by it way too much. You got to look at some days you got to look at the brighter things in life, and there's so much to be thankful for still. Have our health. I have a young, healthy family. Everybody's good. But still, most of us feel that this is going to be a very temporary lift on restrictions. But that said, I mean, the fight must go on. And again, the federal mandates are all in place still, which makes absolutely no sense, and which affects our business. Mostly, it's not really, you know, from a personal standpoint, it's nice. Like I said, you can go shopping freely again, go to restaurants if you like, and so on and so forth. But yeah, the protesting hasn't stopped. I'll be honest myself, I haven't been that involved. I've been at many protests since we left the legislative building in Winnipeg, different slow rolls and so forth we've done. That said, I basically protested for a couple of months full time. I barely saw my family, wasn't at work at my place of work. We have a great office team that, you know, held things together, which I'm very thankful and blessed with. But kind of to catch up on some stuff, you know, the day-to-day stuff, and to have a little sense of normality, just to kind of reset yourself in between. I think that's important too, but I agree. I mean, there's so much work to be done. I mean, it's this whole convoy, one of the biggest things, it's uprooted the corruptness in our provincial and our federal government, like right to the core. And once you know everything that you know through a process like this, you feel guilty sitting back and just doing nothing. And that's where I'm at. Even days where I don't participate in anything, and there's been many of those, I honestly, if I allow myself, I feel really guilty. But I think that's the devil hard at work, right? He tries to discourage regardless. So, but I still think that there's got to be some sort of a happy medium that you got to find. And I know for me, like I said, I have a young family. And of course, everybody's got to make sacrifices during times like this. This is not a normal situation we're going through in life here, and my children, my family very much understand that. But at the same time, it can be difficult. But yeah, sorry, that's a long answer to your question. But yeah, there's lots of protesting still happening, just on a different scale.
Yeah, and Rick, I want to validate all of the feelings that you're having there right now. You know, I went out for lunch today into a restaurant that wouldn't let me in for the better part of the winter, and I struggled. I was like, I don't know if I really want to ever give you my money. And and everyone's back to being nice and kind. And I thought, well, just wait a minute. Just 2 weeks ago, if I had have come in here without a mask on, I would have been, I wouldn't have been allowed in that restaurant. And if I had have gone in anywhere else, I would have faced, you know, quite self-righteous individuals right in your face about not wearing a mask. And so I share those feelings with you, Rick. I share them on like three levels. Number one, if I get consumed by just all of the wrongs that have been done, I can get just be overwhelmed with frustration and anger. Mm-hmm. Number two is, like you said, once you're involved in this type of stuff, and once you've had a police officer hand you a ticket and look you in the eye and say, I think this is ridiculous, but you know, I got to do my job. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a switch that never goes back. Like that you literally go, wait a minute, you're supposed to be upholding real law and you know you're not. So that changes. And then of course, you know, during the convoy, the way that the police just basically put on their soldier uniform, mm-hmm. and we didn't see virtually any police officers cross the lines in protest. In fact, though, I was just told that Liberty Coalition Canada was going to be getting a phone call from an OPP officer here in Ontario who was on leave and is now about to be charged for negligence of duty. And he's got to pay a fine before he can go back to work or something like this, because they told him he couldn't go to work unless he got vaccinated, right. And he didn't. So I don't know the details of that situation, but it's things like that. So we have not seen our Canadian or provincial law enforcement in any way defend the people. And actually a friend of mine said, Mike, it seems like you've forgotten history. Since when have soldiers not done what soldiers are told to do by their commanders? So once you kind of see that, you go, okay, wait a minute. So you can get overwhelmed with your frustration about Canadians who did nothing. You can get overwhelmed at the corruption all the way to the top. Like, you know, the Freedom Convoy did reveal very clearly how much our federal government is running towards structural and economic change and unwilling to listen to the citizenry. Like it's from a script from a movie. Like they just dug their heels in every time. And so you saw the corruption from your local law enforcement. You saw the corruption at your local medical unit, where you have doctors who full well know scientifically that masks are useless, who know full well that they're not supposed to be pushing people and coercing people into a certain behavior. And so you saw corruption everywhere. You actually saw, and Rick, for me, I'm a Christian man, I'm a Christian pastor. You saw the depravity of man coming out so obviously. And on one hand, that's great because it's like, oh, that's right. The world's been telling ourselves that we're all really good and we're all progressing. But on the other hand, it's really hard because you go, whoa, like this, you know, there has not been solid reform, solid Christian influence in this nation enough to overcome all of this corruption from here all the way up. So that's the second thing I felt. And then on the third thing, right to you, you know, you stay at home with your family for one day and you go, oh, I'm letting everybody down. And yet you see Canadians all over the place, not doing anything about it and not caring. So you feel like all the more like you've got to be out there. And you can just, you know, a good friend of mine says, look, you can't always have the armor on every day. And you know, sometimes you got to take the armor off and go rest. And so I empathize with all of your feelings there. And it's good news to know that there are protests still going on. Another question that I would have for you, Rick, out of that would be, what's your primary concern? So when you say we think that things are going to be temporary, and again, we don't have to try to conjecture into what the government is going to do, but just why is why is there still a great concern out there? Why have you been in the fight for a year and a half? You know, there's so many Christians who would just say, stay at home, do what you're told. It's for the better good. Keep your eyes down. Don't believe anything. You know, don't believe your own eyes and ears. Why did you feel that, you know, according to your conscience, these are, you know, you had to get involved, and what are you continually concerned about?
Right. It's a great question. And so for me, I was skeptical very, very early on, like almost right off the bat. Of course, you have to be honest with yourself. I mean, at the beginning, nobody really knew what this was all about. But for myself, it didn't take long. And I know there's many, many other people that were the same as me that caught on real early. And so for me, one of the biggest concerns I had right off the bat was the churches, that the churches were following along with this. And, you know, they, of course, the Bible teaches us to obey our elected officials because they've been elected by God, essentially, right? So, and that's what the churches kept preaching. And again, I respect that until you get to a point where what the government is doing is ungodly, right? And it goes against my Christian beliefs. So for me, that was where I started taking a pretty hard stand and said, you know what, this isn't right. And again, the churches, I think, should have really reconsidered early on. I can't say that for all the churches. Of course, some churches, they stood up for the right of the people and to do what's right in God's eyes early on, but many of them did not. So that was a major concern for me. And I'll be honest, I did get 2 COVID-related tickets over the past, last summer it was. And ironically enough, I mean, I did so many things to disobey mandates and so forth. But again, to me, I didn't get it to a point where you're arguing with somebody. Like I try to always be respectful in everybody's position. Like you don't know where somebody's coming from. So I think that's always important. I don't think I always did the best job by doing that, but I my intentions were good. But the funny thing is, so churches were closed down. So as an organizing group, we thought, hey, you know what? We're going to have church service out in the park, in our city park. Nothing going on. There's no, worldly events happening, nothing scheduled. So why don't we have outdoor church services? We'll do it to the best of our ability. None of us really knew what we were doing, but we'd have a sound system. We'd set up a PA system out in the middle of the park, and we'd have some people come out. And of course, restrictions are really tight during that time. And so we set it up, and so that's actually where I got my fines. I got 2 of my fines back to back. We did that 2 weeks in a row. We held outdoor worship services where we bring up, it wasn't even a pastor every time we'd bring in. We just have somebody who could speak well and just try to give people hope, and we'd sing praise and worship songs, on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. And it was interesting. We'd have our city, our chief of police, not on patrol or not, he was basically not on duty. He'd come out, he'd sit and take pictures of us because we were technically breaking the current orders, because I think it was like you were allowed 50 people or something like that outdoors during that time. So, you know, the repercussions of having church services on a Sunday afternoon outside with just a couple of people, our reward for that was getting ticketed. So I got 2 of my fines for holding outdoor church services or worship services. And I couldn't be more proud to have those fines, quite honestly. I, and along with all the other people that were there, we were just glorifying God and trying to bring hope to the local community, which is, you know, so extremely divided and ripped apart by everything going on. And it was sad to see, you know, our local politicians, I mean, they've been somewhat supportive, really been on the fence. And then, you know, with local law enforcement, with a very tightly knit, I think, Christian community that I live in here, it was very surprising to see that. But that said, that was one of the really important things for me early on, just on how everything that was happening was going against our Christian beliefs, in my opinion, or in my view. And again, that's probably one of the most important things going forward from here, is to protect the right to be able to go to church and to practice Christianity and the way that God intended it. And so right now we're allowed to do that again, but we feel, that could definitely... those rights could easily be gone just like that again, just the way that they came back, they could be gone again. So that's a very important thing for me to fight for. And it goes along with many other things.
Rick, it, it's nice to hear that it was your Christian faith and your desire to worship the Lord that called you to kind of see things for as they were. I continue to be flabbergasted by the men around me who still have their heads fully in the sand or shoved some other way, where they've walked away from the scripture's command to gather together, and they'll say things like, well, the intention is that it's in essence well, how do you gather in essence? And and the reality of it is that's where many of us. So I have the same type of summons as you do. I got them here in Ontario. I still face three of them. The JCCF is still handling our case. And think about the words we're saying, allowed to go to church, fined for being outside praising God. Mm. Like I've said from day one, I don't care whatever pandemic it is. If the pandemic was 100 times worse than it was, we would want to be out in those parks all the more while people are literally dying in the parks, preaching the gospel to them. Mm. Like people would be at home dying by themselves, utterly hopeless. And it would be the church that would be out burying the dead and wanting to proclaim to anybody who was still living that they are about to face their maker. And they need to put their faith in Jesus Christ. It is absolutely contrary to any scriptural thought that in a time of disease and a time of panic, that the church would lock their doors, walk away, go home, and pretend to do everything by letter writing, right? Yeah, if letter writing was the only mode, Paul would not have said, gather together, just read my letters. Right. We have all of these examples in scripture. I desire to see you. I can't wait to see you. And that is because there is something unique that God has created in us that happens when we meet together. And like it or not, you can't look a guy in the eye and lie to his face as easy as you can when you're standing in the room with them. And for these police officers to sit back, our church was surveilled for like 3 or 4 weeks in a row, maybe longer than that. I can't even remember anymore. And it was just atrocious. Like, go stop a criminal, for heaven's sakes. We've got a bunch of seniors and young families in here who voluntarily want to worship Jesus. Either come in and worship or like get out of here. And, I'm just doing my job. It's just my paycheck. Yeah. And Justin Trudeau comes out 6 months later and says, reminds us all that the government is the largest employer in our country. Never have I been more terrified by any prime minister's words in my life that when Justin Trudeau reminded everybody that he is the single most important employer in this country, and he will have his way with his employees.
Yeah.
And, Canadians who have accepted that, they've got we got a lot of work to try to undo all of this, if we can, because, we're so far down the road. But it warms my heart to know that your love and your thirst for freedom came out of a thirst for freedom to worship. That's really, I didn't know that about you, Rick, before we got on. So thank you for sharing that.
Sure. You're welcome.
Well, what would you say the biggest impact on your family would be? And maybe just as far as perception, or do you find your children saying, yay, dad? Do you find your children feeling, hey, dad, copper behind us, check your mirror. We got a copper. I find my kids go in between praying for people and praying for the government and talking like mobsters. What are your kids like?
Well, you know what? So my children are 10, 7, and 4, two boys and a girl. And we've been very open about the things that are happening. Of course, there's some things you're not going to share with that age group of children. Obviously, you want to... You want to share positivity in life, and of course you don't want to scare them in the situation that we're in. But we've been very open with our children, and they are, yeah, they're proud of what I have done, the time that I've spent into it. And of course, they have felt the sacrifices. I mean, the times that I would be home during protesting, and it would be like in and out. They spent lots of time at grandma and grandpa's house, so we have great family. Our family as a whole, like my wife's side of the family, my side of the family, great people, everybody very supportive. That is one key thing that I have that a lot of people don't have, is a supportive family from both sides. Like, I mean, pretty much 100%. And I know that's not the case for a lot of families. There's so much division within the families. I can't imagine. That would be extremely difficult. But yeah, so for my kids too, they converse the same way as me and my wife do in regards to when it comes to mask mandates, stuff like that. And of course, like I said earlier, you want to teach them to be respectful regardless. Of course, that's very important. But that said, yeah, they're very supportive, and they're well aware of what's happening and why we're doing what we're doing in this freedom fight. So, but yeah, like I said, I think it's very important to try and educate your children. You know, I keep reiterating that we're fighting for your freedom more so than ours. We want to make sure when you guys grow up that you have a free country. We've had that, and we've taken it for granted greatly. The freedoms that we've had in this country, there's many things that I don't agree with our federal government, provincial governments, you know, when times before pre-COVID. But in a sense, the way you see it now, how our freedoms have been stripped away from us the last couple of years, we did have a lot of freedom, and we want to try and preserve that for our children. And so we're trying to teach them as much as we can about this whole process, and we hope and pray that they're going to learn some things from it. I know they're very young, but hopefully they'll have some good takeaways from it when it's hopefully all said and done, Lord willing, I guess. Time will tell.
Yeah. Okay. So I have one more question for you, Rick, and it has to do with just the trucking industry, and are we seeing slowdowns still at the border? Are we seeing supply chain issues because of these federal border mandates? Mm-hmm. How has this affected your business? Are you running at 100%, or are you guys down? And obviously, what's your hope then for a resolution in the near future?
Sure. So yes, it is still extremely disruptive to the supply chain, in a sense that there's so many drivers that can't cross the border, which would have crossed the border before. So yeah, you're seeing, it's just a huge change when this whole pandemic, like, I guess, during the pandemic, business was in the transportation industry was really good. High demand, exact opposite from what I thought was going to happen. I mean, the trucking industry is always going to be there. It has its highs and lows like anything else, but I mean, the trucks will always keep moving. That's a fact. That's what keeps, it's what keeps everything functioning. If the supply chain stops, everything stops. So, but when the mandate hit on January 15th, of course, then we started seeing truck shortages right away. I know even for us to try and service our clients, we're way behind. Like, and I mean, every carrier right now, it's pick and choose which loads you want to haul. And as far as that goes, I mean, everybody's waiting. Like for us, you know, we're booking loads 2-3 weeks in advance, where before sometimes you wouldn't have a load ready for a driver when he was ready to go out. So huge difference. And direct effect to our company, it's had a major effect. I mean, obviously revenue is way down during this time, because we do also have a lot of drivers that can't cross the border. And so we try to keep them busy on the Canadian side as much as possible, but that's not really our specialty. We're a cross-border carrier. And there's other carriers that are doing the same thing. So it's kind of congested the market in Canada. Although, honestly speaking, just because of the whole supply chain issue, even on the Canadian side, it seems to be quite busy as far as the industry goes. So people are having to wait 2-3 weeks to get their loads picked up, and a lot of cases where it would have been a lot quicker earlier. And as far as the outlook, I'll be honest, as tough as it is, and I say this to people quite often, as tough as it is to pray for our leaders, I get it. Justin Trudeau, I think he's led by a very evil spirit, quite honestly. And so I know for me personally, I find that it's a huge struggle for me to pray for people like that. But after all the protesting and all the physical things that we think that we've done, and again, continuing, that's continuing to happen, not in the same capacity, I guess. I some days feel like, and this may sound bad, but I feel like the only thing we have left to do is pray for these people and hope that God's intervention will work within them. But that said, it sounds really bad when the most important thing we know is prayer, right? So I think that's always been very important. And so I'm just going to, for me, it's like just going to pray like crazy and do what we need to. Again, for me, I'm probably going to get fairly involved locally here to see how can we create change within our local community. And if everybody did that throughout the country, and I think a lot of communities will, that can ultimately bring massive federal change as well. So, but that said, I'm going to try and stay positive. The outlook isn't looking great for this industry. Like I said, we've had no indication that they're going to be lifting federal mandates, which is really disheartening to see. You know, I know the conservative politicians have been pushing for it like crazy to no prevail from Justin Trudeau. And I'll be honest, I feel Justin Trudeau is punishing the truckers by keeping this federal mandate in place. That's how I honestly feel. That may not be the case, but I think he's going to try and keep it in place as long as he can. But there is some positivity. To cross into the U.S. for truckers, non-vaccinated truckers, that one is expiring on April 21st. Now, whether they will extend it or not, that's yet to be seen. But if that one actually gets lifted, we feel that that may be enough pressure to put on the Canadian government for them to hopefully lift theirs as well. So we're going to keep our hopes high and just keep taking it day by day.
Can you just clarify on that? So on April 21st. Second, you said, or April 21st?
April 21st is when the American side expires their initial mandate. So again,
the Americans will allow Canadians over the border without being vaccinated, truckers.
Correct, unless they extend it. Yep.
Right. Okay. Well, that would be great news, and I hope that does happen because it would put great pressure on the Canadian side, and it would also be ridiculous because if the U.S. is letting you in, well, as a Canadian citizen, you have the right to re-enter. So,
exactly.
So, well, you know what? Rick, I don't think we can end on a better note than you encouraging people to pray. And folks, if you're a Christian and you've just not seen what's going on, you know, I encourage you to be aware and see the signs of the times and to be praying very specifically, and then also to be acting. You know, we pray and we act. We live by faith, both in word and deed. And so, Rick, I want to thank you for doing that. And, you know, the last question about the supply chain, I was going to wrap it up there, but, you got me thinking about it. It seems like people just are living as if life is normal, and the supply chain really would disrupt people's lives. Are we seeing the supply chain recover, or are we seeing the problem exaggerated because of the border situation? Are we recovering, or are we seeing the weights increase?
Well, I guess as far as from a personal standpoint, I don't know how much people have really felt the effect on the supply chain issue. It's more on a commercial level, I think. So, well, mind you, depending, like, let's say, for example, we do open deck transportation, you know, we haul a lot of steel, farm equipment and so forth. I mean, you know, for farmers or anybody that's waiting to get a product out, or for a dealer that's waiting for equipment to arrive, but it's delayed because a trucking company can't bring it in, for a steel or for a manufacturer that produces things out of raw steel, you know, just the backlog on that. I mean, it's clients waiting at the other end of it. So on a, you know, just your regular, you know, for your everyday household items and so forth, I don't know how much we've really felt it, but it's more on the commercial side of things, I think, in some of the bigger items that, you know, like I said, that businesses would purchase and so forth. I think that's really where it's been most, where they've felt the effect mostly to this point.
Well, certainly on that commercial level, it would be felt there first, and then eventually to the retail level after that's been felt. So, well, look, Rick, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate everything that you've been doing. You've clarified a number of the storyline from Manitoba, and we appreciate you doing that for our viewers. Everybody, if you are encouraged by this, I encourage you to share this podcast out. Here we have a great example of a brave Canadian family man. And so, Rick, thanks for being on. And everybody, make sure that you go and give a 5-star rating to our podcast. so that we can continue to do and bring these types of stories together. Thanks so much, Rick, for being on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Michael, for the opportunity. It's a pleasure to meet you. And yeah, may God richly bless you. Thank you so very much.
All right, Godspeed. See you, everyone. Yeah.